All right, folks, we're going to start. David, over to you.
Hello. Hi. I'm David, or Yorick. I work at Pascal. I'm going to tell you a few more words about that in a minute. And I am here to tell you about an ongoing work at Pascal called Cadence. And as you can guess from the name and possibly from the logo, it's related to quantum computing. So before I proceed, I would like to stress out one thing. None of the things I'm going to tell are my work. For one thing, I joined Pascal recently with baggage in programming language theory, compilers, and things like this. And this project has not reached the stage where we can use programming language theory or compilers just yet, but maybe someday. So, a few words about Pascal. What do we do? We build qubits. More generally, we build quantum computers, we build quantum algorithms, we build quantum tools, we build quantum teaching materials. I forgot to mention we are a private company, but we are a spin-off from several laboratories. So there is a strong research background at Pascal. And importantly for today, we build open source tools related to, well, quantum computing. And if you're interested in knowing what the inside of a quantum computer looks like, well, that's part of the inside of one of ours. I think this one is called Fresnel, but I'm not sure. You can see lots of lenses, which suggest that lots of lasers are involved. Yes, lots of lasers are involved. We're not generally allowed in this room because of the class 4 lasers. Way too dangerous. Still, cool to have. So, if you're like me, you might have a question. What the heck is quantum computing? I mean, we all hear about it a little bit. Well, I hear about it every day, but I'm paid for that. But we hear about it in mass media and everywhere on LinkedIn, etc. It's still not clear. At least it wasn't clear to me and might still not be entirely clear yet what quantum computing is all about. So the first thing is quantum computing is about computing with qubits, not with bits. An important part of it is quantum computing is very much research. You may have seen many announcements, each of them informing us nicely that the last few problems in quantum computing have been solved. I'm sure that we are going to see these announcements for the next 5 to 10 years. Quantum computing is currently a very active research domain, but it's a research domain. And while there are companies that are actually building quantum hardware, we are not there yet. It's not something you can buy at the local shop or even if you go further down the road. And it's probably going to be a few years before we can do anything really useful, except in a few domains, I'm going to mention that a bit later, with quantum computers. Still, it's extremely exciting. And when I say it's open research for the hardware, it's open research for algorithms, and these algorithms most of the time are designed based on mathematical models of quantum computing. There are a few, but not many algorithms that actually run on quantum hardware. And there is lots of research on compilers and tools, but again, based on mathematical models, usually, and simulators. Lots of hype, too, on quantum computing. So on the upside, it means that lots of credits for quantum computing, lots of funding, which is why companies such as Pascal and a few others can do their work. It's also thanks to this that a number of academic laboratories can do their work. And it's a good time to be working on quantum in general and quantum computing in particular. It makes things a bit complicated when you have to read a press release and it's a bit hard to understand whether the new problem that has been solved on a mathematical model, has been reproduced in labs, or is actually ready to come out in production. Why do we care about quantum computing? Well, we do care about quantum physics anyway, because because CPUs need to deal with quantum phenomena on a daily basis. One of the reasons why we cannot make CPUs that are much faster anymore is that we have hit some physical limits. I'm not exactly sure which ones. I'm not a physician, but they exist. So we want to go for the next generations of hardware. And at some point, well, you can either continue fighting quantum physics or try to embrace it. So that's one of the reasons. Another reason is that there are hopes that quantum computing will be faster. I mention hopes because despite some papers, including a famous paper by Google 2 years ago each, we don't know yet. There are good reasons to be hopeful that for some classes of algorithms, we will have something very fast, but we're not sure yet. Similarly, we hope that we can be energy efficient. I'm going to show you some algorithms later during this presentation. And there are good reasons to be hopeful that we could possibly someday replace entire data centers working on very specific algorithms with something much smaller. Again, this needs to be validated in labs and on industrial hardware. We're not quite there yet. And also simply because we don't know how to build new hardware at the moment. If you look at what's needed to train ChatGPT, or at least an old version of ChatGPT, I assume it's worse now. If I recall correctly, they were using 10,000 boards, each of them carrying I don't know how many GPUs, each of them carrying I don't know how many cores for the training part. And I don't know how long training lasts. How we do it at the moment is we expend as many resources as we can, which is not something that can last forever. So I mentioned bits, 0, 1, easy. Qubits, 3-dimensional, more complicated. Plus you have the question of whether the qubits are 0 or 1, which is complicated phenomenon. It's measurement, and I'm starting to have a few intuitions about it, which probably means that I'm wrong. So there are two flavors of quantum computing. The first flavor is digital quantum computing. This is a program in digital quantum computing. If you look at it, you'll see something that looks very much like a circuit. Well, that's why it's called a digital circuit. You have quantum data coming from the left, conveniently. All these RX, RY, RZ are gates, which operate on the qubit, in these, all the ones prefixed with R are rotations on the sphere. These X, Z, and I could have had Ys also, are symmetries on the spheres. There are all other gates, but these are the ones that I had an example to use with. And at the end, you might be able to do some measurement. And in practice, you'll have to run your experiment many times because what you end up with is probabilities. So you need to measure probabilities by taking pictures, essentially, which means you have to take many pictures. So as I mentioned, a program is a circuit. And there are programming languages. For almost 10 years, I think, there have been programming languages designed to create those circuits, or at least to give a syntax to the circuits and possibly to do modeling and simulation on those circuits. But the big snag is the hardware isn't there yet. One of the big difficulties that digital has is noise. I know it's not the only difficulty, but that's the one I remember, which is already good for me. Again, I'm coming from a different field. Adapting is complicated. On the other side, you have analog programs. This is an analog program. This is actually part, I believe, of the test suite of one of our computers. So the test here is, hey, can we make a program that looks like our logo? Needless to say, it's probably not a very useful program. But we need to manipulate things at a very fine level. So in practice, when you're dealing with analog, a program is not a circuit, but it's also called a circuit, and some parts of it we will model as a circuit, but in practice it's geometry and pulses. Might be different for other kinds of hardware support, but I think the ideas are generally the same. When I say pulses, I mean laser pulses. So you have to set up a frequency, a shape, and things like that, which is a bit complicated. I'm not going to claim that I have any understanding of how it works. And this, why do we care? Well, there are two reasons. One of them is this actually takes advantage of the hardware. It maps extremely naturally to hardware constraints and to some classes of problems. So from the top of my head, there are a number of graph algorithms that map very naturally to this. I showed you a two-dimensional representation, but it could also be three-dimensional. So graph algorithms, a number of optimization algorithms. I'm going to show you a little bit of an example later. And if we have a problem that maps naturally to an analog circuit, the big advantage is that this is something that you can mostly run today on some machines. Not everything can be run, but we are much closer to this than in a digital world. And one thing I should mention, if you are familiar with the history of computing, every computer nowadays is digital, but before World War II, there were already many computers and they were pretty much all analog. So if you look at the battleships of the UK, US, French, German navies, they all had onboard computers that were electromechanical and that were used for aiming precisely. So they were computing ballistic trajectories. It worked before we knew how to do digital, and it worked before because this specific problem that they wanted to solve had a very nice physical, electromechanical representation. In the end, they disappeared. It took a few decades for them to disappear, replaced by digital, because digital was so much more generic. But it took lots of time for digital to catch up with analog. So this justifies why we're interested not just in the digital, which is going to be much easier to program once it works, but also in the analog, which might give much better results in some specific cases and which is much closer to being actually something that we can use. Of course, the problem is how you program that. I mean, that logo was not very intuitive. Well, it's easy. Well, no, really. And I apparently, accidentally removed one of my slides, which was a big differential equation, which showed on one side the interactions between atoms and on the other side the interactions with the laser itself, which I have no idea how someone can go from this differential equation to actually writing an algorithm, but some people succeed and they have my complete admiration. Anyway, that's why we, and when I say we again, I mean they, have devised Cadence. Cadence is a toolkit. It's designed for experimenting. You can experiment both with digital circuits, with analog circuits. You can mix them. Once you have written your circuit, you can simulate or execute it. When I say simulate, the word is a bit overloaded, but simulate, I mean an emulator running on your CPU or GPU that's going to pretend that it's doing quantum physics at a fairly deep level. You can pick a level. Or execute, well, if you end up in the subset that actually runs on the machine, that you need big glasses and be very careful to look at, that we have in the basement. We have a few of them. They're not really in the basement, but we do have them. So if you end up with this, you can compile your program to essentially a sequence of laser pulses and then send the laser pulse to the computer for execution. We do that because there are many experiments that still remain to be done. We're not quite there yet. One of the reasons, I'm putting it first because that's the one I'm most interested in, but it's not necessarily the main reason, is this is the kind of thing that can help us find out how to design a programming language that is both usable, ideally by, you know, human beings, and also executable on the hardware, which is something that doesn't really exist at the moment. Another thing is, even without that, just having some abstractions on top of laser pulses, for instance, we have libraries of geometries, well, that makes life easier when you don't have to actually solve that differential equation all the time. An interesting aspect of simulating and executing circuits is that we can run optimizations for at least two different meanings of optimizations. One of them being how we deal with noise. Noise is a big problem with quantum computing. If you put your substrate, if you put your atoms too close to each other, they're going to interact. If you put them too far away from each other, they're not going to interact. How do you send exactly the data you want and not the data you don't want from one to the other? So that's the kind of thing we can simulate using Cadence or lower level tools or possibly other tools, but anyway. And the other thing is something I'm going to show you very soon. Again, still might work. So at some point, I assume that some people will ask questions. Don't be surprised if my answer is, I have no clue. Okay, so let's look at a few demos. So this is an example of a graph. This is a random graph. We want to solve the max cut problem. It's a well-known problem in graph theory. The detail is not extremely important. We want to find the best places to cut the graph according to some criteria. So this can be reformulated as maximizing this value. And someone has devised an algorithm to do that.